This show contains language and themes that may be considered offensive to some. Please use your best judgment about whether or not you should be listening. Sci-Fi Noise. I'm your host, Derek Howard. Sci-Fi Noise is a part of the Deliberate Noise Network and can be found at deliberatenoise.com/sci-fi. S-C-I-F-I. If you'd like to send feedback, you can send an email to derek@deliberatenoise.com. That's D-E-R-E-K. Or you can call the audio comment line at 734-331-0772. Now, I haven't done one of these things in a while. However, I have been watching a lot of TV, so much TV, in fact, that I started a new podcast called TV Noise. And one thing I noticed as I was doing is I really don't watch a whole lot of of sci-fi as the weeks, you know, as the weeks and the days go on. I suppose I do. I'm still watching Chuck, the... This season is progressing a little slower than I would like, because I think we're in the third episode. It was going to be on to later tonight. But over the summer, it looked like they had a lot of adventures. You know, Chuck and Morgan were looking for Chuck's mother, who apparently is also a spy. Now, I kind of like that, especially since the mother is played by Linda Hamilton, who I've always liked. But if you stop and remember what the whole premise of Chuck originally was, it was this underachieving, just like normal, almost a normal guy. Because he's a geek, so he's smarter than most people. But he was just a normal, ordinary guy who has something happen to him, and he becomes like a living computer, you know. But then it turns out that not only does he have the ability to know what's in the CIA / NSA, I think even Interpol, because he seems to like access Interpol files every now and then. He has all these secrets from these government agencies, and then later on it develops so that he could tap into like military martial arts type training so he could actually defend himself. Then it turns out that his father was the one who created this stuff, you know, so his father wasn't an ordinary guy. And now it turns out his mother was a spy also. And it's like, wow, okay. You know, it's like the only one who's normal is his sister, who happens to be a doctor, you know, a very young doctor, in fact. Who doesn't spend a whole lot of time at the hospital anymore, but hey. But the thing that kind of moves slow is at the end of last season, Chuck said he was no longer going to be a spy. His sister found out everything. He promised her that he was no longer going to be a spy, which, of course, he lied. He's a spy now. The place that he used to work was a buy more, and that was destroyed. And two characters... Jeff and Lester, a Jeffster, they went on the run because they thought that they were the ones who destroyed it. And now this season starts, and the general that he was getting his orders from is still in charge of the program, Project Bartowski. But she also... Now, that's another thing that always kind of bugged me, too. They call it Project Bartowski, but he was supposed to be like a top-secret asset. You know, he's a top secret asset. If you can find out where he's located, it's not that difficult to find how many Bartowskis are in the book, you know. Anyway, it used to be like this buy more, which was like a Best Buy type deal. It was where he worked, and they had one of his I think it's CIA handler who was who had a cover inside the Bymore, and his the spy who was his girlfriend always seemed to have a cover at other businesses that were near the Bymore. Like I think once it was like a hot dog place or an orange juice place, something like that. And now they decided, you know what, the Bymore is going to be. It's not going to have spies in, you know, a spy or two in. It's going to all be spies. So they have all the workers there are spies now, and that is the that's the new cover. But the spies are too efficient, so they have to bring in the old Bymore team. Who basically, I'm telling you, the old Bymore team has two guys who speak. That's left. Jeff and Lester, and a bunch of really wacky-looking extras, right? And so they brought all the extras back, which good for them, because I think they'd probably get paid for not non-speaking roles, you know, whatever. And so that's where everybody, that's the hub, that's the spy hub. Instead of it getting blown up every now and then, and people are like, what's going on there? It's like, all right, it's a government thing. And there's still one more character, Big Mike, who is in the opening credits, who hasn't come back to the show yet. Hopefully that'll be tonight so they can get everybody in on board so they can quit talking about the rebuilding of the Bymore type deal, you know. But anyway, that's one sci-fi show that I watch. And I'm going through a list of all the all the episodes I've done so far. And there's a lot of comedies. And I think mostly it's because there's a lot of comedies that come out this season, you know. And what's really weird is that Chuck is a spy show with a lot of sci-fi. That's what I put under, you know, sci-fi. But there's a show called Undercovers that's also a spy show, but it doesn't really use a whole lot of science, you know. So I'm not going to really talk about that one other than to say that I like it. I know some people don't like it, but I like it, you know. I like the leads. I like the whole concept. But, you know, like I said, it's not really science fiction-y. Maybe if they add more science fiction elements, then I will talk about it. But for now, no. There's also Warehouse 13. It just had its season 2? Season finale? It just wrapped up. And if they don't come back for season 3, this was a very good ending point to the show. I am kind of sad to see one of the characters written out, simply because she wasn't one of the main characters, but she was a character who was just, she was played by Paula Garces, who was in Defying Gravity, which we all know, I love that show. I can't remember, Karen Hernandez, I think that was her character's name. But they wrote her out, and it looks like, the way they left it, that they broke up the team, and one of the characters left the team, and so you just have to figure out who. It's a good show. Like I said, if they bring it back, that would be kind of cool. Sorry, allergies again. If they brought her back, if they brought the show back, that would be cool. Because there's still some stuff that they have to tell. I mean, there's still some stories they can tell. But if they decide to end it, it would kind of make sense if they ended it here, you know. I hope they don't. I hope they bring it back. But if they don't, it's not going to, like, break my heart, you know. Supernatural came back. But it's Supernatural. I don't want to talk about it. It's not really sci-fi. So there you go. The event. I don't, you know, as I'm watching this at first, it has a lot of nonlinear storytelling, which I kind of dig. People have been unfavorably comparing it to Lost, which I think is kind of unnecessary. But they did bring it on themselves because their musical score, which a lot of people overlook, overlook musical scores in television shows and in movies. I try not to overlook that stuff ever since my friend Barry Nugent over at Geek Syndicate really pointed out how vital the music really is, you know, especially when it's appropriate and good music. It can set the tone for a scene, and you don't even really notice it if it's done right. But if it's just like out of nowhere, like whoa, where the hell did that come from? Then it's bad, and you just notice it. But I've tried to pay more attention to music. Period. So with this one, the music sounds so much like Lost. It's I don't know if they got the same guy doing it. I'm gonna have to look that up. But it's just like, yeah, if you don't want to be compared to Lost, you should have got new music, should have got different music. They could have got the guy who did Friday Night Lights and did the music, and watch it turn out to be him. But no, they kind of lost it up. The thing with the event is, I liked the first episode, and it wasn't looking very sci-fi until like the last like 10 or 15 seconds of the show, and I was like, whoa. All right, I'm on for at least another couple episodes, I have yet to watch the second episode, but the third episode, I believe, also comes on tonight, right after Chuck on NBC. The thing with the event is a lot of people who keep saying the same thing. They keep saying it's boring, nothing happened. It's like, you didn't watch the same show I did. It is impossible for you to watch the same show I did, But Vicious Smith in the comment section, he mentioned, and I believe he mentioned this on Twitter, twitter.com/ViciousSmith or Vicious_Smith, can't remember which one. But anyway, he said that the problem with the event, and this is what we hope, and I'm not going to say a problem, but he hopes that it doesn't burn itself out. It doesn't peter out because it's trying really hard to be a hit. You can tell that it's trying hard to be a hit. And more than just a hit, but a well-acted hit. That's why they brought in people like, Blair Underwood and Lisa Vidal and Laura Ennis and Josh Ritter, okay, who's actually John Ritter's son, Tex Ritter's grandson. They brought these people in not because these are big names or familiar faces, but because these are all good actors who are, somewhat familiar. But yeah, you can tell it's trying to be a hit. Sort of like Flash Forward tried really, really hard to be a hit. But let's just hope that they keep the surprise twists to a minimum, the first episode had a really big twist. And now if they build on that instead of trying to outdo that, then that'd be cool. If they try to outdo it, like, okay, we had this twist. Now we gotta think of something bigger and better and bigger and better. It's gonna turn into Heroes. All right. And I still stand by that first season of Heroes. That was great. After that, they didn't change, they didn't evolve. And by the time they got around to evolving, it was too late. They had tried so hard to keep on to their mainstream audience that a lot of their the geeks who watch TV were just like done with it. It's like, all right, whatever. Also, have been watching Fringe. This season has really turned out to be good. The first season was basically. And I've talked about this before. It's something I didn't like. It was a X-Files ripoff, and I didn't really care all that much for the X-Files, so I wouldn't want to watch a ripoff. But unlike X-Files, which kept teasing at a bigger conspiracy, teasing at what was behind the conspiracy, and I don't know if they ever told what was behind all that stuff. I don't know. Don't care. Fringe started teasing at a bigger conspiracy, and that's what turned me as X-Files crap. But I gave it a second shot in the second season, and I just started watching. And that first episode from the second season just whoa, whoa! And then I watched the entire second season before I went back and I watched the first season, and it had payoff, whereas X-Files didn't. X-Files kept hinting at stuff, and never quite, peeling the Band-Aid off. These guys said, okay, this is what's going on. It's like, this is the conspiracy. this is what the conspiracy is up to. This is why the conspiracy is there. This is where the conspiracy comes from. And now we're in a part where they're, where it's like where the conspiracy came from. And, you know, basically a war has begun. And most people don't even realize it, not even people who are involved in the war. I'm really, really digging it. The first episode was a lot more action-packed than, like, probably most of the rest of the series. But it worked. And it worked for a reason, because it was setting up a character. And a familiar character in a new role that, you know, that's tricky to do without getting rid of what went on before. And I'm trying so hard not to spoil stuff, even though I want to. And I know this is a spoiler podcast, but there's a difference between being a spoiler podcast and being a dick about it, you know. Anyway, what else do we have here? There's a show called Lost Girl. It's on Canadian TV, but that's mostly supernatural stuff. And let me know, do you think I should talk about supernatural stuff? I know I said I wanted to keep it to science fiction, stuff that's based in science. But I don't know, maybe every now and then I can put out a not science fiction noise and talk about other stuff, you know. Magic and stuff like Lost Girl and Supernatural. There's No Ordinary Family. Patty and I watched the first episode. Now, a lot of my online friends, and I don't say online friends, I say friends, you know, if I communicate with you back and forth, then you're a friend of mine. I don't care if I do it face-to-face, over the phone, an IM, email, Twitter, whatever. If we communicate and you're not a dick and I'm not a dick, then we're friends, all right? That may not help you move your couch and shit, but at the same time, I wouldn't expect for you to help me move my couch, you know? So there we go. My friends are sort of split on this show. Some of them think that it's a boring collection of superhero cliches that they've seen before. And others think that this is a very good telling of a show using tried and true superhero tropes. And not exactly cliches, but it takes something that we are familiar with, and it refamiliarizes us with it. And Patty doesn't read comic books, all right? I tried to get her to read Sandman once, and she was bored silly with it. She read True Story, Swear to God. She got into that, but that's not really, you know, superhero fantasy type stuff. That's like a real life romance, and that's why she dug it. Plus the guy, Tom Beale, he's a big geek. She's with a big geek, so she understands, you know. And I think more than being, and I'm going off on a little tangent here, I think it's more than that. He taught himself how to draw, you know, and he put out his own comic books. And he was kind of almost neurotic about it. And when he was with his peers, you know, with other comic book artists, he really felt like he was out of his element, you know. Even though he had that same DIY mentality that a lot of creative people have, you know. There's a reason why most of us don't work for other people. There are people like me who are trained in other things where we have to work for somebody else. But to me, that's kind of like how podcasting is. I know I'm not doing it 100% right. I mean, hell, you can hear me wheezing every time I open my mouth. I mean, I could probably get a noise filter to go over the microphone. I don't think about it because I'm talking. This is real stuff, you know. There's the sniffs, what I'm trying to keep to a minimum. There are coughs, but, you know, every now and then I can't help that stuff. I don't have a dumb button. I don't have this a whole lot of machinery. If you saw how I record stuff, you'd be like, wow, I'm surprised it sounds as good as it does, you know. But there's that same drive to create that Tom Beilen has, you know. when I listen to other podcasts, when I go to the podcaster meetups, which I haven't gone to in a while, I feel like I'm like they like what everybody else is doing is just like so much better than what I'm doing that I don't even know why I bother doing it sometimes. But then somebody will say, "Hey, I heard your show and I'd like to as such and such." It's just like, wow, he listens to my show, right? When I went to HeroesCon 2009, I met Dave Slusher, who was my podcast hero, right? I met Brian Deemer and Jimmy Aquino and Mike Myers. I'm sitting there, I'm eating with Mike Myers. And we're sitting there eating, and the whole group of us are talking, and it just it hit me, right? So I'm having lunch with Mike Myers and Ryan King, these guys who I listen to. I listen to their podcasts, right? Yeah, I help put out their podcasts, but I listen to their podcasts. Keith Cunningham is right down the way. You have Alan White, who produces a he produces an audio drama, which is way different from just producing a podcast, right? I mean, he has to come up with a script, he has to get actors, and he has to produce everything. That's a lot of work, all right? Micah Griffin Lundy was with us, and at that time, he didn't have a podcast, but I'm breaking bread with these people. I'm sitting across from Barb Myers, and we're talking, all of us are talking back and forth, and we're just joking and having a good time, and it's just like, wow, I don't realize they know how much I admire them, anyway, I'm all off the point. Anyway, so I'm starting to get all sappy now, but when Patty watched No Ordinary Family, she thought it was really good. There were things that she never would have thought about, when the mother was running and her belt buckle hit a window and hit a rearview mirror and smashed it. She was like, "Oh yeah, I suppose it would do that because she's going so fast, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." And then when the mother was just like eating a bunch of food, I was geeking out because that's how Mike Barron used to have Wally West in his first few issues of The Flash when he was writing back in 86, 87. Wally was always eating to keep his carbs up, and she was eating a lot also. I wonder if they're also going to have her tone up her legs because that's another thing that would happen. But she was eating, and Patty was like, "Yeah, that would make sense too, And there were other little things, like when the guy was talking about how he could leap far away in a single bound. The guy said, "Yeah, you can leap really far, right? With one jump." And he's like, "One jump?" And the guy's, "In a single bound," which I laughed my ass off, right? And Patty, I don't know if she got it, but she just looked at me and she saw how much fun I was having because I think this show is fun. I'm curious to see where they go next. I'm curious to see where they take the story. Some people were complaining, and I know that this happens a lot, but the whole narrating the show, narrating their history when they were pretty much, talking to the camera, that has been done to death, right? There are shows that do it good, like The Office, Modern Family, they do it really good, right? But the whole conceit of their shows is that they're being filmed for some sort of a television show. That's what The Office is. I'm not sure why they're talking to a camera on Modern Family, to tell you the truth, but it works. But with this one, they're telling a story, but they're telling it to a family therapist, And that makes sense because this family was already having troubles before, and then you add in these superpowers, they would have to talk to somebody. They're not sociopaths like Batman or Spider-Man. They're not glory hounds like, "Look at me, look at me. I'm Captain America. I'm Iron Man. Look, hey, I'm Superman." No, these are just ordinary people. They're in an extraordinary situation. So yeah, they're going to want to talk about it to somebody since they can't tell everybody. Because even then they know it's like, you know what? We have to keep this to ourselves because what have we all been taught to, what have we all been taught, as superhero, fans, you know, we're taught that if you have superpowers, that, the government is going to come after you. People who are going to try to exploit your powers are going to come after you, and the bad guys are going to come after you and your family. So you have to keep it quiet, all right? Unless you're going to put on a mask and then debut in a very, very public way, you know, where there are a lot of TV cameras. Yeah, so I mean that's just what we know. So that's what they're doing. And I don't have a problem with that. The cast is well, the parents are likable, okay? The kids, the one daughter is just like the angry teenage daughter, and the boy, we don't know much about him. So when people say they don't like the kids, you're not supposed to like the daughter, and I don't know how you can form an opinion of the son. You know, it's just the way I see it. Anyway, let me see, what else do I have here? Just notes from upcoming shows, which I have to record pretty soon. Now, there was another season premiere that really bothered me. That's why I'm saving it for last. And that's Stargate Universe. Now, last year, last season, Stargate Universe was the best. Hold on a second. All right. Stargate Universe was the best sci-fi show on TV. In my opinion, it was the best. No, nothing else could beat it. A couple of things came close. I know that a lot of people like Doctor Who, and Doctor Who was good. Do not get me wrong. I'm not saying Doctor Who was bad at all, but it wasn't really a lot of science fiction. It was mostly horror slash thriller stories in a science fiction setting, okay? But when it came to science fiction itself, Stargate had it beat, you know. It tried as well as it could be to be, let's say, hard science. There were things that we may have taken for granted in other shows that it tried to explain away, you know. And remember, it's doing this inside of, you know, Stargate Universe was inside of the Stargate Universe. So it already had certain things in place. You know, there are certain technologies that have already been established as existing. The Stargate technology, for one, all right? The communication stones. The fact that there are aliens and spaceships. All that stuff has been established. All that stuff has been known. We know about it, so therefore they can't all of a sudden say, wow, you know, we have to figure out how to get our starship to go in outer space. Like, no, you've been doing that for the last 12 years, 12, 13 years. What you need to figure out is how to get this particular starship to go where you want it to go, right? That was the show. And it was good. You know, it didn't. It was different from the other shows, right? Some people called it Stargate Galactica, all right, because because the way that it was filmed was reminiscent of Battlestar Galactica, the reboot. The way that, well, the way people dressed was a lot more like Battlestar Galactica. I could see that, but in fact, the one thing that I did like between it and Battlestar Galactica is that they both try to apply some sort of science and some sort of realism to the plight of their characters, even though everything else about it was kind of ridiculous and, I don't know, sort of insane. The fact that in fact, for Stargate Universe, one part they had to scrub the carbon dioxide because it was overwhelming them. So they had to find, I think, this certain, not element, but mineral or something. They had to find something, right? And that was an entire show, you know. And to me, that was good. That was like, okay, well, yeah, that would make sense, you know. Even in a planet, even in a story where they're on a ship that has been created by an ancient civilization and also has mastered teleportation, right? Where you can switch your consciousness with that of another person, right? Even though you have all of that stuff, they didn't really go for a whole Deus Ex Machina like they did in that season premiere, you know? And that really, really bummed me out. The last thing, there was cliffhangers where the leader of the invaders and Lou Diamond Phillips' character shot each other, okay? At the same time, you had two characters who were trapped outside of the ship. Okay, they were trapped outside, and the ship was about to jump, which means they were going to get killed. At the same time, you had the invaders who were trying to take over the entire ship, and they had captured most of the military and the command and the civilian staff. Rush and his scientists had sequestered themselves somewhere else, and they had some of the control of the ship, but not all of the ship. And you had Eli and Chloe in a unexplored part of the ship, and she had been shot, and she was bleeding to death, right? I mean, they set up a bunch of different threads, and it was really exciting. Wanted to know what was going to happen. How were they going to get around this part, right? How were they going to write themselves out of all these different scenarios? And then Chloe's shot, you know, her bleeding leg just magically heals, and she doesn't know how. The guys who were outside of the ship, they they just say, yeah, we just ran around to the bottom part of the ship, and we were saved. We were covered in whatever. We don't know how it happened, but it happened. And it's like, oh, really? And then Rush's part, what made sense, you know, he's like, okay, you know what? I have taken over parts of the ship. I have taken over the shields. I'm going to drop the shields. You guys are all going to get irradiated and killed if you do not surrender, you know? And the guy who had taken over was crazy, and he's just like, no, because you'll die too. And everybody's like, well, no, he won't. He's protected. His part of the ship is protected. We're not. And then all of a sudden, yes, somebody comes to their senses and puts a bullet in him. They frag him, and that saves the day. And Rush now has control of the ship, and they rescue everybody else. Oh, and I forgot about the pregnant lady, right? I can't remember her name. AJ? JJ? The doctor lady, right? She's not even a doctor. She's more like somebody with limited medical training who is now their doctor. She was pregnant in real life, so they wrote it into the show, okay? She was pregnant by the captain on the show. But you can't really have a baby in this show, right? I mean, it really wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. So how did they get around that? Yeah, she was all of a sudden on another planet with her baby. She'd had her baby, and all of a sudden, oh no, this is an alien construct, and she had taken the baby. And this was what was going on in her mind. But in the, you know, an outside with her real body, she had lost the baby when she had gotten shot. But, you know, part of her thinks that somehow the aliens came and took her baby away. And I'm just like, now, is this like a really, really offensive way of getting around the whole tried and true way of getting rid of an unwanted pregnancy on a television show by having a miscarriage? Because if this was just a miscarriage, it could have just said, hey, she got shot. She had a miscarriage. You know, but to put this whole alien shit on there, it really made me mad. You know? Or did it really happen? You never know. Because it happened in a... Because if it happened and the baby is on a planet that they're not going to come back to. You know? I mean, it's just... And I'm telling you right now, it felt like a Stargate SG-1 episode. All right. Now I've watched the first season and I did not like the first season. I liked the end of the first season when there was this big when the aliens were coming to Earth and there was like an alternate reality and you know, it was like a last ditch battle to save the planet and one of those type of deals. I liked that part. And then once it started with season two, which I'm starting now, it went back to the same type of storytelling in the first season. It's just like, whatever. I'm trying not to watch Stargate Atlantis. I finished Stargate SGU, but I did watch like the first half of the first pilot episode because it was for free on iTunes. So yeah, why not? Let's see what it's like. It is marked improvement. You know, the first like 30 minutes or so is a marked improvement over Stargate SG-1. However, I still prefer Stargate Universe Season 1 to anything else, including the beginning of Season 2. And I know it's because the Stargate fans were complaining. I know that's what it was. I know that they complained so much that it had to have caused the producers to say, hey, you know what, we got to change this show so it's more like the other two series. You know, we have to. And it's weird because, you know, before, I know I just, you know, made a little joke, but before it was set in the Stargate universe, but now it seems like it's part of the Stargate universe. The same cheesy, you know, the same cheesy crap that everybody seemed to love, that this show seemed to be an evolution from. It seemed to have evolved from that crap, right? And I mean, it's like, the show was more subtle. You know, now you had the extreme overreacting. You had the deus ex machina-ing, and that's not even a word, but it's just like all over the damn place. Whether her mind was saving her from the pain of a miscarriage or not, but that whole alien stuff didn't work. You know, what the hell with Chloe's leg, you know? I mean, none of that stuff was really present in the first season, and that's why I like the first season so much. You know, they didn't introduce new shit. They took the old shit, and made it work with this new way that they had evolved their storytelling. You know, I mean, it was something different. It was something really different. But I don't know, you know, because, and it kind of bums me out because this is the show. This series is the one that made me want to go back and watch those others. You know, I mean, there's like, what, 12 years, 12, 13, 14 years worth of stuff that I am probably going to go back and watch, and it all came from this show, because this show was so good, it made me want to take a look at this older stuff. And I'm not that crazy about the older stuff. And now I see that you're turning the new improved, evolved stuff into the old stuff that was cheesy that I didn't like. You know, this was the best one, and now they're making it just like the others. I don't know if that's a good thing. You know, I mean, since they have those, the invaders who have now been taken captive because, you know, our team, the good guys, have won again. Now they have to, remember last season it was they had to integrate the civilians and the military into a cohesive unit. Now they have the Stargate universe, the Destiny. I don't know why they just call it Stargate Destiny, because that would make more sense because that's the name of the ship. They have the crew of the Destiny with these new invaders, the Luxon Coalition, I think that's what they're called. Wait a minute, no, not Luxon. Luxon is Farscape. Lucian. I don't know. The invaders are now. There's nowhere for them to go. They can't just like dump them off. Well, they could dump them off on a planet, but they probably won't. So they have to like integrate these people and realize there's some people who decided, you know what, we can't kill these guys from the invaders, and there are others who were, you know, all gung ho for it until it looked like they were going to die. So you have that kind of dynamic working. And so last season, that was the big conflict. Military versus civilian. Now this one, it's going to be us versus them. Different, you know, new characters, that kind of stuff. But I hope they could just get back to exploring the universe and trying to figure out how to get around their particular set of circumstances. You know, that's what I'm hoping. But yeah, what did I say? And I tell you right now, I really feel bad because this was at one time the best sci-fi show on television. Now I have to think all over again, you know, what is the best show? And I think I will try to figure that out. But for right now, this isn't it. If they go down this way, no. I know that there are going to be some people who see these changes as an improvement. But to me, like I said, they had evolved beyond this type of storytelling, this type of acting, this kind of directing, you know? They had gotten past that, and now these improvements just seem like it's just a step backwards, you know? Let me know what you think, you know, because I know, you know, every time I say something bad about Stargate, then I have people who tell me, "Oh no, you're wrong. Why am I wrong? You're wrong because you're wrong." Okay, well, thank you for playing. Thank you for participating. Anyway, stop by the website, deliberatenoise.com/sci-fi. Or send an email to Derek@deliberatenoise.com, DEREK. You can also follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/DerekCowherd, DEREKCOWARD. Or you can call 734-331-0772. Thank you for listening. I really do appreciate it. And I will be back soon with another episode. Oh my God.